This is Life Mint, and you're listening to the Editor's Podcast with me, Preetha Banerjee, and Mint's editor, R. Sukumar. Okay, so the first issue that we will be discussing is Flipkart, which claims to be India's top e-tailer, has been reeling under some discouraging developments like high-profile exits and markdowns. How do you think this will reflect on their business and the entire startup ecosystem?
As a rule, I don't make a big deal of exits, right? People come, people go, but organizations go on forever. I think a lot of people make the mistake of looking at Flipkart as a startup. I think Flipkart has now crossed the stage where it should be looked at as a startup. It's almost going to be 10 years old. I think it's a large-sized company in terms of people and in terms of the value of goods that's transacted on its site. I would say if you were to look at it on the evolutionary curve, I would put it somewhere where, let's say, a software services company like Infosys, for instance, was in the early 2000s. Because many of them scaled up tremendously during what is called the Y2K or the millennium bug period. They did a lot of work. And then they entered the first half of 2000s. There was a little bit of a dip on account of the dot-com bust, but then they all grew very rapidly. So I think Flipkart is around that stage. So they're adding a lot of people. It's also an organization which is probably trying to discover its culture. I mean, 10 years, there must be some sort of culture that's in place. As you grow, how do you keep that culture intact? How do you propagate it? So I'm not going to make a big deal of people leaving, irrespective of what level the people are at. That will always happen. And I don't think it is business critical. It's not going to affect business. We come to the second issue, which can't be dismissed as easily, right? Which is the markdowns. And if you look at some of the markdowns, they are extremely significant. Morgan Stanley, for instance, marked it down to an effective valuation of $5.54 billion. Vanguard has marked them down also. This is a company which at its peak had a valuation of $15 billion. They are reported to be in the process of raising funds. So what is the valuation at which they will raise the funds? Now, I don't think the valuation at which they will raise the funds will be 5.54. It'll be much higher. But there is a very real chance of this being a down round, as they call it in funding, which means the value at which you raise this round will be lower than the value at which you raised the previous round.
Right.
Probably going to happen in the case of Ola also. There have been reports that that's what's likely to happen. We don't know. But analysts have been warning of a probable correction in this whole ecosystem where the tipping point will be a down round by a very significant company in the ecosystem. And you can't get any more significant than Flipkart. So if that happens, you will see a spate of correction. I don't think any of the serious investors will panic, but there is going to be a little bit of hesitancy on the part of many of the other investors. The questions they ask of these companies will be much tougher. They will probably ask them a lot more often. They will look at the numbers a lot more closely. So those kind of things are probably likely going to happen. It's an interesting phase because these companies had a very bad beginning to 2016, focused a lot on correction. And I mean, largely the Indian companies, right? Because if you look at Amazon, it's like one of these perpetual motion engines which is going on. Also because they don't have this funding problem. But if you look at Flipkart, it started 2016 in a not very good place, seemed to correct itself, seemed to effect a turnaround, had a superlative Diwali season, but then demonetization happened. And that seems to have set them back a little bit. So now they'll have to regain ground all over again. I do not for a minute think that it is a coincidence that all this revaluation by the mutual funds is happening after the demonetization crisis, which by reports in our newspaper and other newspapers have cut the sales of most e-commerce marketplaces, some like Flipkart, by up to a third. And some are saying it could even be more. That is probably the immediate reason for this revaluation that these companies have undertaken. We'll have to see how it goes. You never know the value at which a company raises funds till the company raises funds. I know it sounds like a truism, but that's the truth, right? There could still be some investors who look at the larger picture. But my own personal view is that 15 billion looks like a bit of a stretch. So the valuation at which they raise it will probably have to be a little lower.
Okay. Coming to the next issue, this Wednesday, the Supreme Court issued a slew of directions as to when and where the national anthem should be played. What is your take on this?
This is a law, right? And the Supreme Court has no business making laws. It's as simple as that. The court upholds the law. The court sets the precedent in the interpretation of laws. But increasingly, our courts have become very activist. And in this particular case, I think they've exceeded their brief. You cannot make a law like this. Unfortunately, it's an area where no one's really going to stand up, put their hand up and say, how can you do this? Because there's also this, the national anthem is very closely related to this surge in nationalism that we are seeing right now. So no one wants to be seen as anti-national. So they want to, no one's really going to protest too loudly. I'm all for playing the national anthem, but I think if you put rules like this in place, and this is just tokenism, right? I mean, tokenism has the ability to take symbols and things that mean a lot, that are rich in terms of what they mean to people, how people feel about them, and trivializing them. And that's the risk that this judgment does. So at two levels, I think this is a horrible kind of decision by the Supreme Court. At one level, I don't think they should be making law. The responsibility of parliament to make laws. In India, it's very clear. There's the executive, the legislative, and the judiciary. It's the role of the legislature to make laws. It's not the role of courts to make laws. And at the second level, you're trivializing the national anthem. By doing this, you have no business telling people when and how to play. And also, I think the judge said that everyone should stand up and show respect to it also, that the doors of the theater should be shut. If I remember a ruling by one of the courts related to a tragedy in a theater in Delhi, a fire accident, it's the Upahar fire accident, where one of the reasons why people couldn't escape were that the doors were shut. One of the higher courts in this country clearly said that you can't shut the doors. I mean, you can keep them shut, but they are not locked. They're not latched. And then that's what this judge seems to have suggested. So I think it's a horrible decision.
So moving on, 22 days and many developments later, India is still grappling with demonetization. And reports of how its impact has trickled down to the various sectors are coming up. And, people have just received their salary and they're queuing up in front of the ATMs in the banks. So where do you think India is with this issue?
It's a tough question, right? Because what all of us know is that there is short-term pain. The long-term impact is still unknown. Conceptually, our view as a newsroom is that the move to cashless is good for a variety of reasons. Should, in the long run, if everything goes well and if it's implemented well, reduce transaction cost, should enable financial inclusion, should make transactions traceable, which means there's no more, unaccounted money, black money, whatever you may call it. So that view is intact. And it's not easy to, it's always difficult to get people to change behavior, right? So some of it is the pain that you're seeing. But at the same time, in the immediate short term, you have the big problem of remonetization. At least some of the money that has been taken out of the system has to come back into the system. Not all of it will come back, because the whole aim of this exercise is also to reduce the cash in the system, right? I mean, by encouraging people to do things digitally. And I think because people are being forced to, and you look at the growth in wallets, and you also look at the growth of merchant establishments which have signed on with the wallet companies, that's very, very significant. Mm-hmm. And it's almost 50-60% in some cases. And I think it means that a lot of people have realized that it's easier to do transactions. They're also being forced to do it. So it's probably the only way in which they can do transactions. So they're not going to be using cash all that much. But that said, there is going to be need for cash in the system. And what you're seeing is people queuing up to take the cash out. What you're also seeing is probably some sort of hoarding behavior that is beginning to emerge, where people take the cash and keep it because they're saying, oh, it's not easy to get cash, so we might as well take it and keep it. There seems to be some sort of geographical distinction, right? I mean, the problem doesn't seem significant in Mumbai. The problem doesn't seem significant in Chennai. The problem seems significant in Bangalore to some extent. Seems very significant in Delhi. We had a very interesting piece, UGC, if you may call it. It was a contribution that came in from a traveling salesman. I mean, this is a very senior executive in a cement company who traveled around various parts of the north. And his overall refrain was that, okay, people are managing. And I think that's a really big message to take away from this. The fact that the Prime Minister has been able, through sheer goodwill, convince a lot of people that what he's done is for the good. And they seem to be willing to put up with some amount of pain in the interim. What is not good, of course, is the way this whole exercise has been implemented. There have been rules that have changed. Policy seems to have been made as the whole thing went along, which is never a good thing. And those could have been avoided. But the big messages I would take away from this is, one, the Prime Minister's ability to take one of these ideas and get people to go along with it. I hope he does it with more things, including Swachh Bharat, which is at the crossroads right now. Two, that cashless is good in the long run. Right. And as a newsroom, we are a firm believer in that. I know there are two views about that. I know some people don't really go along with that. But we believe that cashless is good. And three, And this is very important because there seems to be, like we've pointed out, there seems to be an exponential increase in the number of economists in India. So everyone has a point of view on this. The long-term impact of this is still unknown. We don't know. We will have to look. There is short-term pain, but long-term we'll have to watch and see.
Our last issue is the Tata mystery spat. The simmering rift at the Tata boardroom has seen some dramatic developments in the last few weeks, and it is only getting uglier. What do you have to say about this?
See, this is a critical month. We are now into December, and this is the month where there are a lot of extraordinary general body meetings, or EGMs as you call them, of shareholders. Tata Sons has called for these meetings at various Tata operating companies to get Mistry to go as chairman, to remove him as chairman, in some cases to remove him as director and everything else. So that is going to happen. The way things stand right now, it does look like they will manage to get him out of most of the companies. It also looks like they are very close to appointing a new chairman for Tata Sons. So now what we don't know is what Mr. Mistry is going to do. I don't know whether there are any grounds for legal challenge. There could be. He's played his cards very close to his chest. But at the shareholder level, I think in the next month, you will see the issue getting resolved. Of course, things are rendered a little complex by the fact that he's a significant shareholder in Tata Sons. But at the operating company level, they will manage to get him out in most of the companies. My own sense, based on some of the reporting we've done, is that the institutions could choose to abstain. They're not going to take sides in this thing. And the institutions in the companies where Tata Sons does not hold a majority, it's the institutions that have enough stake to sort of decide things one way or the other. As a newsroom, our position has been that both sides have been washing dirty linen in public, so there are all kinds of scurrilous allegations that are being made. We've tried to stay above all of these and tried to look at it dispassionately. I still think that the board of Tata Sons owes an explanation, preferably through the current and the interim chairman, Ratan Tata, speaking to people, including us, on why this was done. I don't think the explanations that have been given so far are satisfactory. At the same time, I also do not feel that the allegations that are being made by one side that performance of Mr. Mistry was not up to the mark are entirely valid. I'm equally not convinced that the allegations made by the Mistry camp about governance issues of the Tata are hugely significant. And what is happening is it's created a lot of uncertainty at the operating company level. Directors are having to choose between the two sides. CEOs are having to choose between the two sides. It's not good in the long run, right? So what's the big message? This is the month when a lot of resolution will happen. At the operating company level, I think most of the EGMs will decide in favor of moving Mr. Mistry out. At least that is what it looks like at this point in time. What should you watch out for? The next step of Mr. Mistry, because the Tata Group will then effectively do what it wants to do, which is they want to remove him from the operating companies as chairman and director in some cases. He will continue to be a director in Tata Sons, but he has an 18% stake. The rest of them have much more stake, so they will anyway get their way. I don't think they can remove him as a director in Tata Sons. So they get what they want. The question is, what does he do? And that's what we'll have to watch for.
Those were Sukumar's top stories for this week. Do let us know what you think. You can email us at feedback@lifemint.com and also tweet to us and let us know on Facebook. Thanks for tuning in. See you next Friday.